someplace we don't know
that
where.
Like,
you
for super encouragement. I said, I was walking out of here, and they said how good you were. She got it.
Good egg.
Well, I'm not as good because not wearing my ring right now, but.
That's okay. Yeah. We were waiting for you.
Thank you.
I was
going
to say 8 for the record.
Okay. No, you wouldn't have won.
Because
the number was 63.
Wow.
All right, so we're Ryan Meyer Fitzwater, and now we're going to be talking about multiplying for kingdom. So there's handout here.
Yeah.
Oh, this
we'll get to
that.
Yeah,
we'll get to that.
So,
get to that. Yes. That's a little, that'll be a little worksheet that we'll do. So. Awesome. So now tell me the kind of, so you're in Grow Group, and you are?
I'm on staff.
You're on staff?
I work with Don.
Okay.
Yeah, I was at y'all's session last year on rest. It was great. And I was one of the people who told her y'all were awesome. But
we have another card.
Sorry. No, I don't get it. I'm on staff, so I don't count. But no, so I work with Don. I'm the program associate, so I'm the guy that helps plan and organize all the stuff we do.
Okay, so when you come into the Glen in June, are you behind that? Some other work there?
Oh, for like.
We're not really sure what it is. John just kind of.
Yeah, I don't interface with that aspect.
Okay.
But like major events for Summit. So awesome. Very well. Yeah.
We should have gotten 4 cards for the four.
I will. Yeah.
Susan, how about you were in the prayer ministry?
Yes, I'm at the Cypress campus.
Okay. So we're kind of taking this from the perspective of multiplying perspective of just multiplying, our own selves individually, and kingdom impact. We're really looking at growing the kingdom, praying for people. But also to multiply, to really multiply grow groups, or multiply. You can use it to multiply every ministry that you're part of. Multiplication needs to happen. That's the healthy model. So I want to tell you a little story about a friend of mine. Her name is Joanne, and she actually was knew her through school volunteering, that kind of context. And she was of another, she was another faith, and she was just really not sure she was a part of it. She was a wonderful mom, and did a lot of great volunteer work. But anyway, she had an accident that really kind of changed her life. And after the accident, she had a lot of friends that people went to our church, and she knew of our church because we were real active in our community. We do a lot of community storehouses. We do a lot like your church is very active in areas around you. Anyway, so she actually responded positively to an invitation from the church. She did. She ended up joining a grow group. It was our equivalent, our church, for a grow group. And one of the first things she learned to do was she learned about a relationship with God. But in the context of getting into the Word and listening to the Word on her own, and that was totally transformational in her life. And she caught it. She got a major dose of loving God and just started on a really positive growth cycle. But she ended up being in a little grow group, and a year and a half later we started keeping a prayer list, and we're going to talk about people that she really felt like God maybe had placed in her area of influence to get closer to Jesus. And one of those is one of her neighbors who became a Christian, moved to another church. She started influencing people. And Joanne started another group at our church. She's done multiple groups now. And it's pretty amazing the multiplication that's happened from one person. And I don't know if you guys have ever seen, the multiplication versus addition, the chart, the graph. But it's pretty amazing. So multiplication is absolutely the way that God works. So it's just, that's why we're looking at multiplication in groups and individuals. So
quick time out.
Yeah.
Someone's device is playing audio.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I thought it was recording at first, and then I thought, no.
No,
nope.
It's my. Sorry about that.
I've leaned over this, but it's definitely
I don't know how that got started. It's an audiobook I'm listening to.
Well, you're not going to hear it very well, so.
Right.
You're going to miss a couple of chapters.
Yeah. All right. so there's a picture of our family right there, our youngest on the left, mm-hmm. and our and that's Margaret's mother on the right, and then right next to her is our oldest son. And so it just kind of helps to get a little picture of who you're talking to. Like we said, we're with the Navigators, been there almost 12 years. And, we're with another ministry before that, and then the workplace before that.
So where are you based?
In the Colorado Springs area.
Okay.
Mecca.
Yeah. Cool.
So we're going to talk a little bit about why should we multiply. And the first thing is that it's because God says so. So, you know, 2 Timothy 2:2 says, the things that you've heard me say in the presence of many witnesses, trust these to faithful men and women who are able to teach others. And so it's that whole idea that God commands us to multiply, to continue. So we need to take what we've been given and pour it into other people to multiply that. And so if you think about it, go all the way back to the Garden of Eden. What was the first command that God gave Adam?
Fruitful and multiply.
Be fruitful and multiply, absolutely. So that's
in Genesis
1:28. What's that?
It's an emphasis on multiple.
That's it.
Yeah,
that's right.
Absolutely.
And then in Abraham, over in Genesis 22, he said, indeed, I will greatly bless you, and I'll greatly multiply your seed as the stars of the heavens and the sand which is on the seashore. And then if you go on to Israel, in the context of loving God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, he said, hear therefore, Israel, and be careful to do to them that it may go well with you, and that you may multiply greatly as the Lord, the God of your fathers, has promised you. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't stop with the Old Testament, obviously. You know, we move into the New Testament, we see the Great Commission, which I'm sure you guys are all very familiar with. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so it's very obvious that we're supposed to multiply, both to through grow groups and to people inside the church, but also to people outside the church as well. But unfortunately, multiplication is one of the greatest challenges of the church. And I think the fact that we have four people here.
You're right.
It is a topic that people just really climb up on. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, it's awesome that it's you guys that are teaching us, because this is the Navigators, right? This is the model. This is the blueprint.
It is. It's pretty much that life. So we are going to watch.
In Columbus, we have a variety of nurseries.
So it's a quick video just that talks about the principle of multiplication. And they never start when they're supposed to, and this one did.
In Columbus, we have a variety of nurseries, garden centers. And the vision of a nursery is to get rid of as many as they can in the community and planting these trees and shrubs all over. And then we have what's called the Franklin Conservatory. There, all the plants stay in that place. At church, sometimes we end up being more like the Franklin Conservatory, that people kind of lined up in neat rows and it's in a building. Where in reality, we need to be more like a nursery. And how can we plant people for the sake of the gospel coming every corner of a community?
So here in Houston, the equivalent of the Franklin Conservatory is the Rainforest Conservatory at the Museum of Natural Science. And then kind of a garden center example would be Houston Garden Center. Apparently, they're like everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, sell lots of plants. So that kind of puts it in perspective to those two locations here. So if you think about the difference between a conservatory and a garden center, what are some of the things that you think about?
You know, you can think about this in the context of prayer ministry or any kind of ministry in the church, if you think about it. These two mindsets are really what we deal with in the church.
Conservatory's wall to keep other things out.
I would say conservatory is more so enriched just about growing what's already there. So you're focused on the plants that are already inside the building and focused on making them healthy and making them grow. Where a garden center is more so about reaching others. So it would be outreach, finding people who are not already a part of the faith and pouring to them, helping them to grow as well.
Yeah. Good.
Be a little group in the church that is, you know, huddling together and doesn't want to expand or change or, you know, multiply.
Any other differences?
The garden center is like a conduit, right? So stuff comes in, and then it's meant to go back out. It's not meant to stay there.
Mm-hmm. They're not doing their job if that plant stays there. Yeah.
Also, the same thing, like conservatory is like a set number, garden center is always changing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's
in the first
Okay, good.
So we want to just kind of get that mindset as we kind of go through the rest of this. And also we wanted to kind of get into the word of, you know, you can look this up in your Bible or we can see.
I read it.
Yeah, we have.
They're all young. They can read.
Oh yeah, well, this is pretty big.
Well, ours is, but there's.
Oh, is there a little? Oh yeah, yeah. You can you? Yeah, can you guys read that? It's pretty dark. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So let me just tell you this passage. There are so many. When you start looking at it, there's so many passages of Bible multiplication because it really is a God of multiplication. It's pretty amazing. But we kind of chose one that was maybe didn't like the feeding the 5,000 everybody knows about, the multiplying loaves of fishes everybody knows about. So we thought we'll find one that's a little more obscure, so maybe you can pay attention to it a little bit more. But I wanted to tell you the kind of a context in case you're not familiar with this passage. So this at this point in time, Elisha is ministering. He's God's chosen messenger for the time. There's a famine in the land. There's very limited resources around. And God is basically, Elisha, this man, there's a character called the man of Baalisha. I don't know if that's the way it's pronounced or not. But anyway, this man of Baalisha is of Shalisha. Man of Baal Shalisha is a town. Baal Shalisha is a town. And so he comes.
Activated, yeah.
There you go.
I needed some active. It's keep everyone awake. That's what it's there for.
So this Baal Shalisha, where this guy is from, it's really kind of interesting because Baal, we all know, is Canaanite God. But Baal, when used in the verb tense in the Old Testament, can refer to and the Hebrew can actually refer to God, our God, the true God. Mm-hmm. And so this Baal Shalisha, when you put that together, that actually the name of that town is the God who multiplies. So this man, the man of Baal Shalisha, who is, he's not really identified any more than that, is actually from this town called the God who multiplies. So that's kind of the setup for the story in the midst of this famine. So who wants to read that? And then we're just going to talk about what we can learn about multiplication from this passage. So, who would like to read it?
I got you.
Okay.
A man came from Baal Shalisha, bringing the man of God 20 loaves of barley bread baked from the first ripe grain, along with some heads of new grain. Give it to the people to eat, Elisha said. How can I set this before 100 men? His servant asked. But Shalisha answered, I'm saying it now. But Elisha answered, give it to the people to eat, for this is what the Lord says. They will eat and have some left over. Then he set it before them, and they ate and had some left over, according to the word of the Lord.
Okay. So, thinking about the story, what kind of things can we learn about multiplication? What kind of things do you observe from the passage that might be principles that we could look at in terms of multiplication?
I would say sometimes it might seem illogical or impossible, but it comes from having faith in God and not in yourself.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And obedience is part of that, but I think it stems from faith, like she was saying. Because if he doesn't do it, then you don't see the outcome. Mm-hmm. If it's not done in trust and faith, then it doesn't happen.
Right.
To
trust and faith. Elisha give them a vision for multiplication. Do you see that in there? Mm-hmm. Where would you see a vision for multiplication?
You'll have some left over.
Yeah.
They'll be extra.
They'll eat. Yeah. It's food. Mm-hmm. They're going to eat.
There's going to be plenty.
So you gave them a vision for multiplication.
Yeah.
How about, you said faith, prayer? Do you think he was a man of prayer?
Mm-hmm. Well, if I was the guy and not praying little loaves of bread for 100 people, I'd be praying.
Yeah,
well,
you know, we kind
so.
Of think of it like it was a loaf of Wonder Bread, but it was probably a loaf of bread like that.
Yeah.
So
what kind of character could we assume this man up from Baal Shalisha. What kind of character do you think he might have? What can we infer from his story?
I would say one who's been continually walking and trusting God, because it would be very hard to be hugely afraid like this when you haven't been walking with God consistently.
Mm-hmm. So if we're in a position that, you know, where we're trying to multiply, we have to make sure that we are there, right? That man would not have been selected to be part of the multiplication if he probably had not been walking with God like that.
We have to be generous with it and bring it. And he brought 20, not just two. Mm-hmm. He brought 20 out of his best. Mm-hmm. So we have to offer our best, whatever it is, Jesus Christ.
So what did you think about the phrase, how can I set this before 100 men? What do you see there when he said that? How can I set this before 100 men? What's the simple thing that I have?
Doubt.
Constraint. We often are limited by our own constraints, aren't we? Mm-hmm. How about promises and principles of God? Does man know the word? Mm-hmm. How do we know that?
He quotes him. This is what the Lord says.
According to the word of the Lord, right? Yeah. So, yeah. So anyway, there's lots there. You know, you could read it and think about it. And it's like, wow, there's a lot of really great principles. So what? Yeah, don't forget. Yeah. So we took those principles and we kind of put those with the kind of general things that we know to be true about multiplication. And put them in this little diagram. This diagram is not ours. It comes from the Wayzee Alongside Earth, if you've ever heard that book. But it's not really applied to multiplication there, but it is about multiplication. So this is the little diagram. It's a triangle, R plus 2D plus 3A, and we're going to talk about those things. But is basically the formula for multiplication. If you look at that target bullseye is a multiplying disciple maker. So it's people who you want to have in your ministries that are going to turn around and reproduce both, you know, inside and outside the church. You know, because it's important to multiply groups within the church, but the focus should always be kingdom. You know, we always want to think kingdom growth. So we can't just think about inside the church. So, you know, and so think about the perspective of the story, but also think about the greenhouse versus the nursery too. Because, you know, in the greenhouse, you know, a lot of times, you know, it really is to prepare tender plants. I mean, up north where Roy's from, they call it hardening, I think, where they bring them into this little protective environment to grow them, to nurture them. And
introduce them to the cold a little bit at a time. Put them out during the day, but bring them in at night, you know.
Yeah, kind of baby them until they grow up and they're tough enough to be transplanted into the regular environment. That's grow groups are kind of, I was thinking a lot that grow groups really are kind of like that. That's a perspective you need to have in order to see them multiply. It's that it's not a conservatory. It's got to be that nursery and launching out, just like this man from Malisha, Baal Shalisha. So anyway, the R, if you kind of go ahead and look at that R, that very first thing is about relationship with God and others. And one way of thinking about these are the things that are really important to multiplication. Relationship is just huge. It's huge to any ministry. But if you want to multiply, good relationships. And that's relationship with God and others. You can see that with the man in the story. You can see that in all the scriptures. A good way to remember that, we like to, it's up, in, and out. So it's kind of three relationships that are always important to keep in front of ourselves and people. And that's, you know, our relationship with God, our relationship with those in community, and our relationship with those that are not yet in the kingdom. And we use that phrase because we like to say non-Christians or non-believers. Non-believers is used a lot, but even non-believers believe in something. And it's, you know, it's kind of, sometimes it doesn't settle well. But when you think about relationship with God and others, the very most important thing is to remember that you're not going to multiply unless you're modeling the behavior yourself. Anything that you want to do, that you want to multiply, you got it really starts with modeling. So if you've got a group and you want them to have a strong relationship with the Lord, you've got to model that. And it's not that it can't happen, but it normally doesn't. Because that, you know, even Paul in 1 Corinthians, he said, you know, imitate me as I imitate Christ. It is a modeling. That's what leaders do, is model. And as we model, you know, it's really, we want to make sure that we have that sound relationship with Christ, because we want to make sure it's really easy as we leave to begin to get our identity messed up and, you know, need stuff from the people that we need, and we want to get all that we need from God. And we want to be modeling that in John 15. I love the abiding and the vine, you know, being obedient to him. But fruitfulness comes out of abiding. So, anyway, platform God, not us. Reflecting on the word is something we always have to model and do well, and pray for others. We, you know, we love for every group that wants to multiply to keep an evangelism list. Keep a list of people that, you know, that you're praying for in the church that you feel like could assume a position, or that maybe could replace you or whatever. But be always thinking about those people and keep a list of it. And know the promises and principles of God. It's really important to know that, to keep it for people. And know it because those promises are things you want to claim. You want to say, you know, as you're reading those, it's like, you know, God, you promised this. He wants us to ask, and ask with confidence for those things. So,
go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead on the promises.
Well, no, I was going to move to prayer.
Okay, before we move to the prayer, I just want to say the last thing is have fun. You know, whatever you're doing, if you want to multiply, make it attractive to people. Mm-hmm. That is really important, and relationship really does that. If you have a good relationship with those that are a part of the ministry, people want to be a part of it. You know, they see something, they're attracted to it, and they want to come, they want to be there. So don't, you know, sometimes you know, we kind of think about it as being less spiritual, which is really not. Play is very spiritual, you know, but make it fun, make it interesting, make it something that people want to come to.
So the next slide there is just, I was actually looking for an illustration of a prayer journal, and I thought, well, I have one. I'll just pull this out and scan it. So, you know, those are the people that I'm praying for specifically in the area of evangelism. So Sean, my next door neighbor, and Mike is a dear friend, and my mom is not yet a believer, and not yet in the kingdom. And then, you know, I have attached Romans 1:16 to that, for I'm not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God that brings salvation to all who believe. So just, I'm sure, Susan, that's a key part of what you guys do in a prayer ministry, is to have a list of people that we are praying actively for, praying for relationships. You know, my next door neighbor, Sean, is a special forces guy. He spends half the year in another place in the world killing people. Like, what do I have in common with him? But I'm really seeking God for how I can build a relationship with him and be able to, you know, eventually share Christ. So the 2D, is that right? No, the wrong one, sorry, is discovery and discussion. And so in this, it's really around the word. So we want to be involved in discovering the word and then discussing what's going on in it. And so there's kind of three areas: vision, expectation, and asking good questions. And so vision is creating a vision for multiplication from the very beginning. So the first time somebody gets involved with you, Susan, in a prayer group, begin to cast that vision. But, you know, you're not successful at this until you turn around and reproduce it to somebody else. You call somebody else into the prayer ministry. Same thing with prayer groups. And that's the way we want to help people frame success from God's perspective, is this whole idea of multiplication. And expectations. So you want to create the right kind of expectation from the very beginning. This is really what we're after. And correct wrong ones. So we don't want people to put God in a box or put themselves in a box. Say, I could never do that. You know, that's the whole question of, what am I supposed to do with these 20 loaves and 100 guys? I'm not going to do it. So that's really important up front. And then the whole idea of asking questions. You know, ask lots of questions. The last workshop that we did was really all around questions. So don't tell truth. Help people discover truth by asking them questions.
Because they know that. Act on it. And the whole thing with this discovery discussion is really about being intentional with those that we have a responsibility to lead, to be intentional in developing. You know, and we can't, it's just like the nursery or fruit trees or anything else, we can't actually make them grow. You know, it's nothing we can really do. Only God brings growth, but we can provide an environment for that. And so these things that we're talking about, this discovery and discussion, is a much healthier environment for people to actually grow up to the point where they can reproduce. Because that is an issue, is we have people in the church who have been spoon-fed, and they continue to be spoon-fed. Mm-hmm. So we've got to help them to learn and to get excited about discovering things on their own, listening to God on their own, and growing up to be reproductive. So
this next slide is just kind of, there's three pictures.
Can you repeat that last thing under ask good questions? You were saying like...
Yeah, so don't tell truth. Ask questions that lead them to discover truth. So there's kind of three ways a tiny group can operate. You can have the teacher facilitator that is the one who pours all the knowledge into the other people. We don't want that. Or you can have it where, you know, I interact back and forth with Josh, but it's all kind of just between us. The other group members aren't interacting at all. Or the third picture is where everybody is involved, talking to everybody, sharing information, sharing thoughts, and everything like that. And that's really what our goal is to keep everybody involved in that across all the information. So then the last thing is this, is the triple A, the 3A, it's a triple play, it's application, accountability, and affirmation. And so the key there is that, you know, it's not enough just to learn more stuff. Howard Hendricks once said that God doesn't need smarter sinners. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not about learning more things, it's about applying what we already know. So we want to really focus on application. Accountability is a key to that happening, so don't be afraid to ask. I hold you accountable for that. China, if you've said you want to make this change, can I ask you about that next week? And when you know that's going to happen, it makes a difference in the way that you respond to things. And then, you know, the whole idea of affirmation. Many people's love language is affirmation, so any place that you can encourage them and build them up with things that they're doing right is huge.
Yeah, on the application and accountability, too, you know, I always take it down to a level of real action, so it's not just, you know, something that you want to do, but you ask, so when do you think you can make that happen? And how is that going to make a difference in your life this week or tomorrow or the next 24 hours, the next 48 hours? Mm-hmm. So, you know, make it really specific and actionable and then hold them accountable to that. Because that's really what causes growth. I mean, it's when, you know, because there are hundreds of people, thousands of people that leave wonderful teaching, wonderful groups, wonderful small groups, wonderful sermons. I think that was awesome. And 2 days later, it is gone. You know, there's absolutely nothing that is still there from what you intellectually learned. And so if you, you know, if you can't commit to some kind of action and know how that action is going to happen and have it on your calendar, it's not going to work. So.
Yeah, because otherwise it's really easy to just say, oh, I want to pray more. Mm-hmm. So then help them to reduce that to what does that really look like? Mm-hmm. How much time are you spending? Who are you going to pray for? When are you going to do it? Some of those kinds of things.
So is that the application?
Mm-hmm.
That part, just like, okay, what does that look like? You want to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very much.
And application is really hard to get people to go, because it's really easy to say, oh, yeah, well, God wants me to, he wants me to be more loving to my husband. So
yeah,
that's a great
does.
Thing. Yeah. All right, so you can say, oh, that is a great application from that, and move on. But that's not
measurable.
How, mm-hmm. Yeah, how am I going to be more loving to my husband?
Sure.
When am I going to be more loving to my husband?
If you ask me that in a week, how am I going to know what happened?
That's right.
You know, so, you know, the application, it can't be broad. It needs to be specific and personal.
Yeah, so it's a SMART goal.
Right.
Specific,
yes.
Measurable,
achievable,
aggressive,
yeah.
Reasonable, and time-bound, or achievable.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or aggressive, reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
time-bound.
Yeah.
Yeah,
those
are
the
SMART,
SMART
goals.
Really
SMART goals.
Yeah, we use
yep.
those a lot. So.
What was the...
Yeah, go ahead.
So,
specific, measurable... Aggressive is the A that I know. Reasonable. So aggressive or reasonable. Time bound.
So if you get people to think through those five letters as they're making up a goal, it'll be a
mm-hmm.
better goal.
Yeah. So the next page is a diagram that is, we find, very helpful. Or the kind of environment you want to create that actually does help people to multiply. And if you look there, it's called the Invitation Challenge Matrix. It was developed by Mike Breen with 3DM Ministries. But if you look at what invitation is the kind of the degree of welcoming, the kind of atmosphere that a ministry has, it is, you know, how energizing, how enjoyable it is. You know, that's really invitation. It's about how much I really want to come. They're inviting me into it. It's an inviting environment. So the challenge is the degree to which people are really encouraged to grow, kind of in the, you know, less spiritual disciplines, accountability, those kind of things, how much accountability and that kind of stuff. So if you look at that and you look at it on a matrix, that upper right hand, that high invitation, high challenge is the goal for all of our ministries. Those are the kind of ministries that people want to be a part of and that will invite multiplication. So if you look at the other things, like if you have that if you have a high invitation, it's a wonderful environment, all that kind of stuff, but you don't challenge people, then you get what's called a chaplaincy culture. It's pretty low. It's a cozy culture. It's a consumer culture. If you have a low challenge and low invitation, you get a very boring, apathetic, there's hardly any expectation. It's a little commitment.
Why would you go there?
Yeah, boring, boring. So over on the bottom right hand, where you have low invitation, but you have high challenges, burnout. You know, and there's, you know, and it's kind of interesting because churches and denominations, you know, you can almost peg them where they are and what, the, you know, kind of issues that they're having. But what you want is high invitation, high challenge. You know, I think about, you know, even this event is what I would call the high invitation, high challenge, you know, because we hear that you're very encouraged very strongly to be here, you know, but it's also, but they do a really good job of, you know, making it fun and wanting to be here and all that kind of stuff. So the question is, how can you provide that kind of environment in your ministry? So let's just take a couple minutes to talk about that. So in your context, how can you provide a high invitation, high challenge environment?
I think for us, you know, Corey, by the way, I am at our downtown campus,
mm-hmm.
and I work with the kids and the preschool, but I also, we're multiplying our group right now, so I'm going to lead the new group. Yeah. And so it's going to be interesting to see how to create the, I don't know exactly how I'm going to create high invitation, but in the past I think we've been too focused on like slogging through some study material instead of spending time like just interacting and forming their relationships. Yeah, I think the groups that I've been a part of have had a tendency to do that. I think that's a challenge to overcome. So
one way that I see it happening, so high invitation, high challenge, I think ultimately there has to be that personal element, because you can't challenge someone you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can, but you don't know if that actually sparks their interest or actually seems like it's difficult to them. They may think that's laughable, or they may say, like, I would never do that, you know. And then, you know, the invitation part, like, you should almost have that culture of just, like, everybody matters, which is easier said than done, because some people, I think, they're good about getting those initial relationships under their belt, and then they stop because they've got a comfortable group. So I think it has to be every single person is another personal relationship. And then from that, you can then say, hey, here's areas where we're not doing well as a group, or here's areas where I've seen us do better. Here's where I think the guys can step up more, the girls can step up more. But I think, because looking at that, I mean, I have that question a lot because I work with Summit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Summit is young adults, and there's a lot of, seems like, lack of challenge. And then sometimes it seems like the invitation fluctuates depending on what they're excited about. It's like some people are going to be excited about sports, some people aren't.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are going to be excited about, you know, the Porch Live, which we do every Tuesday night for young adults.
Yeah.
Some aren't at all. Like, some people I have to, like, drag them and say, hey, you need to tell people.
It's good for you.
Even if they don't, even if you don't go, that's fine. You don't have to go, but you need to tell people that it's an option. You know, like, silly stuff like that. And it's just, like, I think it all stems from there. Just keep that going. You need to have that personal relationship first. And, I mean, I think you could say that with any of those, but, like, that's essential for those.
That's that R. Yeah.
Far right quadrant.
Yeah.
In my class, it's kind of interesting because I'm in one of the new Ignite Bible Studies. So we just started in August, brand new class. And the people on leadership were in my old Sunday school, but the majority of the people who are in the Sunday school are new to Houston, just graduated, first like big boy job and everything. So for our first semester, the past however many months, we haven't had grow groups. But all the leaders have gotten up, it's like every 2 or 3 weeks, each of us have shared a testimony. And so, you know, I mentioned we've been talking about grow groups for like several months. Some of us have been mentioning like in our testimony, like how it's really helped us grow and everything. And so now we're starting, like it's like the kickoff, and I have like a pretty good turnout of girls, so that's kind of exciting. So I feel like we have the high invitation, and so now it's just talking to the girl leaders and just making sure, like, okay, like this is when you can really keep people accountable, because this is where you're going to be sharing your dirty laundry. This is supposed to be your accountability group, so like feel free to, you know, kind of call them out a little bit, just like, hey, like, you're dating this guy, do you think you're crossing boundaries? And like being upfront and just asking, and like being willing to be vulnerable yourself, and you know, share when you've messed up.
Yeah, and the grow groups, the covenant really helps with that too.
Yes.
That kind of helps you.
I was going to touch on that and just like expectation. What role does that play in the process? Because it's almost a tedious balance, because some people see the expectation as like a lower on the invitation side of things. So like you want everyone to participate, but you're saying, hey, here's the expectation of anyone who participates.
Mm-hmm.
And so like they're aware before they get into it, you're inviting them, hey, we want everyone to be here, but here's the expectation if you're going to be here.
Yeah.
And so like how do you see that factoring in? Because like we've done that with the Porch Lie. We followed Watermark's example with that, and they have a volunteer application. They're much more, you know, streamlined with the process, but basically the application is like, hey, you're going to agree to follow these basic fundamental Christian moral and spiritual values that we ask.
Yeah.
And that, you know, then they tell us about their, you know, their story and all that, but it's like, it's a commitment. It's like, hey, if you fill this out, you understand that you're going to live this way, you're going to avoid these things, you're going to commit to a year of service, and you're going to be here every Tuesday with a few exceptions, and you're going to communicate if you have a problem, you know? So it's pretty straightforward. It's not like it's asking people to do more than they want or more than they should be willing to do. But I'm just wondering if that changes the way people view the spectrum, or like changes how they interact with the spectrum, you know, like does that taint the high invitation?
Well, to me, I think if you don't have to set expectations, people can feel like it's a bait and switch, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think then that just destroys the relationship, and they never come back.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, sharing with people up front, to me, maybe it's just my personality, but I'd rather know what I'm getting into.
Well, me too, for
and,
sure.
and then still, you know, be able to make that decision. Not everybody's going to come. Like,
yeah.
But then just be able to make that decision, like, okay, this is for me, or no, this is not for me, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's really important.
I think the hard part is I don't think most people are like you or I in terms of that they would readily accept that in terms of, like, so some people may say, yeah, I'm all in, yeah, I agree with all this, and then, like, they're not following through on what you had said as an expectation. And it's like, the high challenge part of that would say, hey, you're not doing it, and then, you know, if they don't respond, then you have to be like, hey,
yeah,
this isn't the spot for you.
Yeah, not everybody's ready for that. So I think what Corey said is really true, that, you know, that actually I think expectations probably make it a higher invitation environment for the kind of people that you want a lot of times. And that's, we look at this acronym to kind of select the people that you want to multiply. You don't want to multiply. There's some people you don't want to multiply. There are lots of people in the church that we do not want to multiply.
Yeah.
So you want to multiply the right kind.
Mm-hmm.
We call those people a faith. Faithful, available, initiator, teachable, and heart for God.
Right.
So you're looking for those kind of people constantly in your area to multiply.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to bring new people in. Those are the people that will be attracted to an environment where they want to be empowered and multiply.
Yeah, for like the past 2 months, we've been like really nailing it into our class. Like, this is about commitment. Like, we expect you to be there every week. We expect you to read whatever you guys choose to read every week. Like, very few, exceptions. But, like, of course, you know, if something happens and you have to miss like one day, like, a okay, fine, you know, talk about it in advance, but we expect you to be there. Like, it's really hard to grow vulnerable relationships with someone when someone hasn't been there for 2 months and then suddenly they show up. And that's the week. I'm going through something hard. Oh, this person's here this week. I can't share because I don't know them. Like, we need you to be there consistently.
Yeah, what was, can you finish that?
Faithful, T is teachable.
Yeah.
H is hard for God.
Faithful, available, initiator.
Yeah.
Teachable, hard for God. Yeah. Yeah.
So. And we've also said you have to be a believer already. Like, if you have friends who maybe aren't, or they aren't, you know, on fire for God, that's fine. That's why we have our midweek. That's where you can really grow, and we're all about outreach. But for grow groups, we need you to be
committed.
Yeah.
Yeah. You, so, what you do. That's why you have the covenant.
Do y'all see on the high invitation piece, like, some people, so, like, you could say, till you're blue in the face, and I'm sure y'all have identified this or seen this, of just, like, hey, you're welcome here, we want you to be here, this is something that we think you should be a part of, we think this is a very valuable thing, want you there. And then that falls on a lot of deaf ears for some people. Until they get the personal invitation. So where is the invitation, the high invitation line on announcing it, making the information readily available, and then the personal invitation? Like, where's how do you see that playing out in the high invitation?
I think the personal it has to be there.
Right.
That's
our base high
invitation. So would that be, like, maybe identified as the pinnacle of high invitation? Is like personal, and then
I think mass
invitation is like kind of
The stronger the relationship, the stronger the invitation will always be. You know, I want to come if I know you and I trust you and I love you, and if you say come, I want to be there because I know you know what you're talking about. So relationship is huge. So that's. We kind of did that because it's all of those things are really important if you want to create that kind of environment. Another thing that you mentioned that reminded me is, you know, in that accountability and, you know, not being too lax, you know, grace, you know, it's like, well, you know, where's grace? I missed 3 times in a row, you know, where's grace? You know, I think in that upper right hand diagram, you have to think that I used to think grace was over here and truth was over here. You know, we want to kind of, you know, balance those things. But really, you can't have grace without truth, and you can't have truth without grace. They really are one and both kind of, I mean, they're not the same, they're obviously different, but they both are part of each other. You know, you cannot have grace without the truth of the gospel. You know, you've got to have, truth is part of grace, or else grace wouldn't be there. And on the other hand, truth, we're not being true to people. We're not presenting them truth unless we hold them accountable and they understand grace. You know, the truth is grace. It is about truth. It is about grace, and it's about accountability.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really both and. So we have to have high grace, high truth in that upper quadrant.
Well, we have to remember that 2,000 years later, you know, still narrow is the way. There will still be people who call you Lord, Lord, but I hear you now. And so we can invite, but ultimately people have to be willing to step into that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I think it's interesting. I'm in kind of the next phase of life for most of the people that you are working with, right? And I think part of your issue is they have too many choices for how to spend their time, right? So as you mature, as you have more pulls on your time, you start to have to choose, like, what am I going to do? Am I going to be a Christian? Or am I going to do all this other garbage? And so it's almost like self-correcting in a certain way as you mature, and just in the world, like, as you have more pulls on your time, kids, job responsibilities, things like that. I mean, the NABs, I know that that's exactly the kind of things that you guys deal with, right? Because it's college kids. Have the ultimate amount of freedom. So I just want to encourage you, like, don't be discouraged by the fact that, like, you feel like you're over communicating, people aren't showing up. I think part of it is the people who are supposed to be there are showing up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, so for me, my challenge with Summit is sometimes it's like, long story short,
I could talk about this for a while, so I'm going to have to condense it to something more brief. But I don't want to have to hold people's hands and make them see the value of something. If we communicate it clearly and readily to the point where no one has missed the opportunity unless their eyes were closed and they had headphones on, like, if it's out there and they have a chance, like, you should not have to, like, drag them to this event. Like, if they don't see the value in it, like, you've been highly invited, and the challenge that we present is this is for you to bring someone with you. This is not a party that we're throwing you just because we like you. Although we do like you, we want you there. We want you to make this an event that you see as an opportunity to host somebody, to bring somebody that doesn't like church or isn't familiar with church, and introduce them to our community where they can become a part of this group. And it's just like people don't get it. Like, time and again, it seems like that challenge, that invitation to come and bring people, falls on deaf ears. It's like, I might come. And then it's like, that's the biggest factor, is like whether or not they want to come. Yeah. And it's just like, where do you...
Well, and that is truly, and this sounds like a little cliche, but it really is where prayer comes in, because for some people to come, that has to tweak their hearts. There has to be an interest. There has to be a desire. So, yeah. Okay, so I'm going to just tell you this idea approach here. You may have heard about this before, but this is really helpful in multiplication. And it's kind of a process, regardless of what you're doing, to instruct you. You tell them how, then you demonstrate, you show them how. Experience, you do it with them, then they do it and assess, give them feedback. So that instruct, demonstrate, experience, assess is a great way. It gives people courage and confidence to. And like I have this woman, Kathy, that's helped. She, for 2 years, I helped lead her to Jesus. And, you know, we went through some discipleship together, and she just didn't feel like she could turn around and do that to somebody else. And I knew she could do that. I didn't have any idea, but she just didn't have the courage and confidence to do it. So I brought her into a little triad that we're having, kind of like a little group. And I said, you know, Kathy, I'm gonna be gone a whole lot. And, you know, I can't do this for these two women have asked me to come alongside them, but I can't do it. Because I'm not gonna be here 75% of the time. Would you help? Would you come alongside me? And so for the first 2 or 3 times I did it, I asked her to do it the next time, and I was gone, she did it that time. You know, it's 3 months later. She's done it all by herself. I'm hardly there now. And she is, like, totally on the run. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have to show them how. It's this way with everything. You know, just whatever your kindness is, whatever you're trying to get to, just those principles. Tell them how. Show them how to do it. Let them do it with you. You know, give them some, and then, you know, maybe you lead, and then they lead, and give them some feedback. And then let them go on their own. Let them do it kind of their way, too. That invitation is really important. It doesn't have to be exactly the way you do it. So these, here. So
there's a little evaluation that you guys can do if you're currently leading your group, just to see how you're doing kind of in these areas. And then kind of a picture of multiplication. There's a story that's told about if you cut an apple in half and you see the seeds in it. You know, it's really not about the number of seeds that are in that apple, but it's about the number of apples that are in every seed. So if you were to plant that seed and it turns into a tree and then, you know, produces apples forever. So these little chalkboard apples here are for you to take home a piece of chalk and just write the name of 2 or 3 people that you want to pray for that either, you know, check that we really would respond to an invitation like that, or we become part of a growth group or something like that. So take one of those home with you. Have that in front of you and
And so this
is the R plus 2D plus 3A.
So
it's just a few little questions. So you can, like, if you have a group of leader or you know, whatever you're trying to, it really is about how you're leading the group for the kind of things, setting proper expectations, all the things we talked about. It's all important in the multiplication process. So this is just a little checklist to see, you know, really am I developing kind of relationships? Am I the one I need to? Am I, you know, using discovery discussion so that I'm growing, helping them to grow in Christ, providing the right environment? And am I appropriately, you know, making sure that we have application and accountability and affirmation? Those are the kind of environment that will reproduce. So, questions or comments or anything?
Thanks. My friends were right.
Give her another card.
You guys are great. I'd say your church, people in church, the people who lead here, you guys are all wonderful. You really are. Yeah.
And Maria, thank you for hosting us.
Yeah. I actually did my MBA in A&M. So I did my MBA and I did it here at Houston. So I was never actually on campus. But so I don't know exactly what y'all's role is within the network.
We work in churches and leaders.
Okay.
So we have 10 divisions in our year. So we're
right. Okay. Understood. So.